Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is The Guardian.
Everywhere I go around Australia, we're not seeing the skill shortages addressed. People are still crying out for those skills, the nurses, the engineers in particular. There just doesn't seem to have been much of an impact in those areas.
Hello, I'm Paul Karp, Guardian Australia's chief political correspondent. Today, I'm joined in Geelong by the Shadow Immigration Minister, Dan Tehan. Welcome, Dan.
Paul, pleasure to be with you. And sun shining through here in Geelong, and it's a lovely autumn day.
Good to hear. I had the crunch of autumn leaves underfoot walking back from Claire O'Neill, the Home Affairs Minister, who was speaking at the National Press Club with the release of the migration review. It's been a big few weeks. The government also announced that they're going to create a pathway to citizenship for New Zealanders here in Australia. But I wanted to start back in March with a speech that you gave to the Law Council, and you said that Labor is delivering a big Australia without being upfront with the Australian people. It's Labor's big Australia policy with no plan. Could I ask, please, what you thought of Thursday's release of the migration review? Were Labor at least upfront about temporary migration, and did it constitute a plan?
Well, I don't think it did constitute a plan. And one of the disappointing things about speech by Claire O'Neill was I thought they might have offered to give us a briefing, have Martin Parkinson brief us, and also provide us with a copy of the 200-page review. It was only made public literally as she started speaking. So that's a little bit disappointing. So we've obviously got to look through it, digest it. There's a lot in there. There are things that, you know, on the face of it that I think we can support. I think we all hope and want for a better visa processing system. I think reducing the number of visas and streamlining the visa system would be a very good outcome, and we'd be happy to work with the government on that. Making sure our education and migration agents are working so that the people that they're meant to be working to get outcomes for, that's what they're doing rather than getting financial outcomes for themselves. I think if we can do work together in that area, and then making sure that we are focusing on, in particular, young and skilled migrants, that's something that I've been talking about really for nearly 12 months now. So they're the sorts of things that we'd like to work with the government on. And my hope is, even though it was very disappointing that we weren't briefed and weren't given a copy of the report, that we'll be able to do so.
Well, there's good notes of bipartisanship there on the things that you liked from the review so far. Could I ask what you think needs more explanation or more detail about where the government's going from here?
Well, I think Claire O'Neill's speech just raised a lot more questions than it gave answers. And the question that the big question is, and it's the one you referred to before, is everything that Labor seem to be doing is advancing a big Australia by stealth and not really with any sort of plan. And recently we've had the Reserve Bank come out and say that they're concerned with the 650,000 additional people that we're going to be bringing into Australia over the next 2 years, the impact that that's going to have on inflation and hence interest rates. There's already concerns being raised about what it means for congestion, what it means for housing, and what it means for rental increases. And none of that was addressed in Claire O'Neill's speech. Those externalities of immigration, which you have to balance versus making sure we are addressing those skill shortages, there didn't seem to be any analysis of that, no talking about economic costs to what they're seeking to do. As a matter of fact, the detail was very scant. We don't know what skill shortages they've been trying to address in the last 10 months, where future skill shortages are. It seems like now that we're going to find all that out at the end of the year. And Labor are in opposition for 9 years. They've come into government. They don't seem to have a plan for immigration. They've commissioned this review. And now we find out that having commissioned the review, we're really not going to find out what approach, if anything, they're taking or what strategy they have in place till the end of the year. Meanwhile, the number of people we're bringing into the country just continues to increase.
Yeah, now the point I'd make about that, the 650,000 net migration expected over 2 years, Claire O'Neill did say at the National Press Club that we're expecting an increase in arrivals in the short term, which she thinks is temporary because it's, you know, since borders reopened after COVID. The minister made the claim that if all the things in the review were implemented, it would actually reduce the size of the immigration program. I know you're a little sceptical of that claim, but we might look at one of the measures that has that potential. The government says that they're going to be adding more integrity by ensuring that international students are genuinely studying rather than coming over studying a junk course to get work rights. That would be a material improvement to the program that could result in more quality, not quantity, couldn't it?
Potentially, but once again, there was absolutely no detail. All she said was these would be conversations she'd be having with the Minister for Education and then the Minister, Brendan O'Connor, as well, so the Skills Minister. So once again, it's hard to see how, and in the meantime, the education international student numbers just continue to increase. So in theory, what she seemed to be saying made some sense, but in practice, once again, absolutely no detail apart from further conversations. So I just can't quite understand what the point of the review was. I thought she would come out and say, we're accepting these recommendations and this is what we're doing. Instead, she seems to have just raised further questions, said she'll do further consultations with her ministerial counterparts and we'll get some sort of response at the end of the year. Meanwhile, I think we're all seeing the impacts of that net overseas migration number of 650,000 plus on housing, on rents, on congestion. And everywhere I go around Australia, we're not seeing the skill shortages addressed. People are still crying out for those skills, the nurses, the engineers in particular. There just doesn't seem to have been much of an impact in those areas. So they're all the things that I was hoping she would have been able to clearly point to. And I just wondered whether it was a mistake not to have Andrew Giles, the immigration minister, there. He seems to be across a bit more of the detail. And the fact that he was overseas is quite strange. And I think so where she was asked those specifics and she couldn't answer, she could have been able to say, but I've got Andrew Giles here as the immigration minister. He'll be able to answer them. I think that might have helped her press club address.
Now, you mentioned skills shortages there. The broad thrust of the review, which the government has accepted, is to have a three-tiered system with sort of extremely highly skilled and highly paid people at the top that needs less regulation, just get them in, a sort of middle tier that will be people earning above 70,000, which would be, you know, engineers, IT, those sorts of skills. And then a third tier, which would be lower paid, but in areas of skill shortage, like the care economy. Is that a sensible approach that could prioritise the areas of greatest need in the Australian economy?
in theory, once again, there is the potential. And look, I haven't had a chance to go through all the detail, but in theory, that does seem to have some appealing aspects to it. I mean, all we saw today announced was the 70,000 increase in the TISMET. And one of the questions that I have is, I think in most of the cities that won't have much of an impact, but once you go into rural and regional areas, it will. And for instance, in the care economy, and particularly when it comes to aged care, that could have a real impact on our aged care facilities. So what would be really helpful would be if the government had some modelling so that we know what the impact would be, asking aged care facilities to find an increase of potentially $16,000 as a one-off for workers in regional and rural areas could have a real impact on those aged care facilities because they're already financially struggling. So some detailed modelling that shows that there's been deep analysis done of this, they understand what the impact would be very helpful. And once again, it would be great if either Claire O'Neill or Andrew Giles could brief us and give us an understanding of how this is going to work, because it's in all our interest to make sure that migration fills these skills shortages that we have, and especially in the care economy. But we're not seeing any ability or any want to sort of do that. And, we wonder the reason why they won't do that. And it seems to be, I think, because I think deep down they want this big Australia by stealth, and therefore they don't want the sort of scrutiny that they might get if they did provide us with all the detail.
Now, for people that don't speak fluent migration, the TISMET is the Temporary Skill Migration Income Threshold, which is the pay floor for skilled workers. You've got to earn more than that to qualify for the visa. And that's going to be raised from about $54,000 to $70,000. Claire O'Neill was quite critical of the coalition for allowing that to stagnate over many years and argued that that made it more of a lower skilled visa, not a higher skilled visa. Do you take any responsibility for, the fact that there are 1.8 million temporary migrants with work rights in Australia and that a lot of those people came under the coalition's watch?
Well, we believe in temporary migration. We also believe in permanent migration. You've got to get the mix right. Now, a lot of that temporary migration was defined to fill those skill shortages. Now, when it came to the pandemic, obviously, we saw a lot of those people leave, but we saw some of them stay. And we obviously then had to make sure that we could accommodate them through the pandemic. So there's some legacy issues there from the pandemic. But we think a well-run migration system has permanent migration pathways, but also temporary migration pathways. And the temporary migration should be what it is, temporary. So if you have someone here for 4 years, they can come, they can learn the skills, fill the shortages, and then obviously return to their country of origin. That helps them then be able to get jobs in that economy and be able to help address the skills in those countries. So we believe in the two pathways, but you do have to make sure that your temporary migration system, if it's designed for temporary workers, then that's what it should be. And it's particularly important when you go through economic cycles. Obviously, due to our economic management, we were able to run a very strong economy, which meant that demand was there for those temporary skilled migrants. But the beauty of temporary skilled migrants is that once you get an economic downturn, obviously you can adjust the levels to ensure that that's not having a negative impact on Australian workers. And one of the fears that I have is that we seem to be increasing the permanent pathways, which means it gets harder and harder then to adjust if you get a downturn in the economic cycle. And my concern is, especially with the way the Labor government are managing the economy at the moment, is that we could see that economic downturn and they won't have that flexibility with the temporary pathway visas to be able to adjust them to ensure that we don't see that negative impact on Australian workers. So we'll be looking at the detail on this to see whether they've got the balance right.
On Friday, Anthony Albanese and the states discussed how they can work together to plan better for migration, for infrastructure and services. What role is the coalition going to play in this debate? Are you going to be lobbying for more investment to improve, you know, infrastructure, or are you going to be raising concerns that migration can't be handled or managed effectively?
Well, this sort of big Australia by stealth approach, we have real concerns with. And one of the things that doubles my concerns is that after Anthony Albanese met with Dan Andrews in Victoria, what they've done is they have pushed out the timelines for the suburban rail link. They've pushed out the timeframes for the tunnel over the Westgate Bridge. So all the important congestion busting approaches that the that we were taking seem to be now being put on hold, and that I think is just going to lead to more pressure in the city. So in the budget, one of the things we'll be looking out for is how much is being postponed when it comes to these key infrastructure projects. I'm in Geelong today. There was $2 billion that had been allocated for fast rail between Geelong and Melbourne. That's been put on the never now. So postponing this key infrastructure spending doesn't seem the way to deal with congestion and the number of migrants now coming into the country, which, as we've discussed, has hit 650,000 and by Claire O'Neill's speech could grow even higher.
It's the luxury of opposition, though, isn't it, to carp about this? You know, when you're in government, you know that business needs workers, the budget needs population growth, and older Australians need carers. But in opposition, you can try to tie migration to other social issues like the housing crisis or traffic or other externalities, of as you've called them today.
Look, I think what we've tried to do and what I've tried to do is be very constructive in the approach that I've taken, because we obviously do want to see skilled workers come in and address those skill shortages, especially in areas like aged care. And if Claire O'Neill had have announced something on what they'll do to address the policy position they have for aged care nurses and the requirements that each aged care facility has for them, I would have welcomed that. But once again, and she was specifically asked this question, all she said was, I wish Andrew Giles was here to answer that. And as we know, Andrew Giles is overseas. So I think what we've got to do is, in opposition, be very sensible. I've spoken at the press club. I did so last year to outline our policy approach, and it's a very clear policy approach. And I think what we've got to do is be helpful and constructive when it comes to this Labor government in pointing out the types of things that they need to be looking at and working through. For instance, they want to move away from temporary migration to permanent migration, but temporary migration is demand-driven. So when it comes to international students, it's demand-driven. Now, they're talking about putting some requirements in place, but we're not clear on what that will be. So if it doesn't reduce demand, then all that's going to do is lead to a higher number of permanent residents here. So it's those sorts of things that we just want to get some clarity from the government on. And as I've said, we would have really appreciated a briefing from the government so that we could ask some of these questions and try and be helpful in trying to help them. One of the other things I'd point to is Claire O'Neill was asked whether there would be money in the budget to fix the IT issues. And as we know, you've got to keep investing in the IT issues because that in particular helps with the integrity of the system. And she said, no, there wouldn't be. And as you know, they cut funding from the IT systems in their October budget. So one of the things I'm very keen to do is work with Claire O'Neill and Andrew Giles to help them get more money for the ICT system for the Department of Immigration. Because if they don't do that, then what's going to happen is that integrity in the system will continue to be jeopardised, and that's not in anyone's interest. So hopefully they'll have more luck at the Expenditure Review Committee of Cabinet next year, because it seems by her own admission in this budget, she didn't have any.
A big theme of a lot of the changes, including last week's announcement that New Zealanders will be eligible for citizenship in Australia after they've lived here for 4 years, a lot of it is about providing permanency to people who are already living in and contributing to their communities. That's fair enough, isn't it?
That for those who are living, working and contributing, absolutely. And, you know, that's something that we've said we support and do support. The problem is, and once again, with New Zealand, while that aspect of it is really positive, and I've got, you know, wonderful people in the dairy industry, in the timber industry, working in some of our agricultural value add facilities in my electorate who do an outstanding job. And I think streamlining their pathway to citizenship is very positive. But one of the things and one of the reasons why we had the system in place we did with New Zealand is that our welfare system is a lot more generous than the New Zealand welfare system. So what you do have to watch for is that all of a sudden that this change doesn't lead to the type of outcomes that we're not really looking for, and that's New Zealanders coming over here to access our welfare system. And we've just asked very simple questions about, has there been modelling done on the cost of this change, and what is the potential impact that it might have on our welfare system? Because, I mean, I think these are all the things that Australians need to be aware about. And once again, there's none of the detail around those things that the government is providing.
And the Home Affairs Minister was also challenged in the questioning about the Pacific Labour Scheme. Do you have any concerns about that in relation to what the review found?
Yes, I do. And one of the concerning things was the fact that she wouldn't even address this issue. In the report, it clearly shows that Pacific Islands have real concerns with Labour's Pacific Labour Scheme, that it will take young, skilled people from the Pacific to Australia and that they won't return. Now, one of the benefits of a temporary scheme is that they can come over, get the skills that they need and then return, whether it be to the Solomons or Vanuatu or Samoa. And the skills that they've learned, they can then build up their own economies with. So the fact that this concern has been raised, and when Claire O'Neill was asked about it twice, she said, well, you'll need to address that through Penny Wong and Pat Conroy. Now, I would have thought if she'd had the report for 2 months, and given how important it is that we get this right, because our Pacific strategy has to make sure we're building up the Pacific, not building it down. I thought she could have come up with a much better answer, and I hope that Penny Wong and Pat Conroy will be able to respond, because Claire O'Neill's lack of ability to do so, I thought, was incredibly telling.
Well, moving from the New Zealanders working in agriculture and timber, I wanted to ask a question with your former Trade Minister hat on about the EU trade negotiations. Do you think we'll be drinking Australian Prosecco and eating Australian feta in a year's time, or will the EU not agree to a deal if we insist on keeping those names?
Well, it's a really good question. And once again, this will come down to the ability of the government to be able to negotiate. And my hope is that they will be able to negotiate so we keep those geographical indicators, because I think it's important that we do. But also we've got to make sure that we get meaningful access, especially for our agricultural products. One of the things we were able to do with the United Kingdom FTA, which I negotiated with Liz Truss and Anne-Marie Trevelyan, was to get the best access we've seen for our agricultural exports outside the agreement that we have with New Zealand. Now, my hope is that we'll be able to see outcomes, not at that level, but at a meaningful level with the EU. So that's the challenge. And in the meantime, we obviously have to protect those geographical indicators, which are very important to our nation. So my hope is we will be drinking Prosecco in a year's time, and we will be able, Australian Prosecco in a year's time, and we will be able to also say that we got meaningful access into the EU market. So we'll wait and see what the outcome is. I wish Don Farrell all the best in his negotiations. The EU aren't easy to negotiate with. I think I had three rounds of the negotiations and we were able to make substantial progress. But one of the things I was making very clear to my then counterpart, who Don's negotiating with, is we need that meaningful access for agriculture, for our beef, for our lamb, for our grains, for our dairy, that it's incredibly important. And so I wish him well in achieving those outcomes.
Not easy to negotiate with, but was that the sticking point when you were in charge of it, that was a red line for the EU? They just wouldn't give up on the naming rights?
Well, I've always thought that we need to do these negotiations in a bipartisan way and never did basically talk about what the sticking points were when I was negotiating the UK Free Trade Agreement and the India Free Trade Agreement. Both, I think, very, very good agreements and ones which I've been pleased to see the Labor government have been outwardly promoting in a very positive way. So I don't want to talk about what the sticking points were in the negotiations, because that might give the EU a little bit of an advantage over us. So I'll refrain from doing that, other than to wish Don well in his negotiations.
Now, you're a Victorian Liberal. The dust has settled a bit since the Aston by-election earlier in April, but we're still interested in people's views about what the Liberal Party should be doing to attract more support. What do you think happened at the by-election and what do you need to do now?
Well, I think the by-election took place when the government was still enjoying somewhat of a honeymoon. I think having a by-election 10 months after a general election, the people were very much still of the view that they wanted to give the government a go, which is fair enough. But I think it also pointed to the fact that we need to be doing the policy work that we need to really demonstrate to the Australian people that, okay, we had our 9 years in government. We had to deal with a pandemic at the end of it, which was obviously very challenging, but we got the best economic outcomes and the best health outcomes, more so than any other country in the world. But now we've got our sights set on, okay, what are the challenges that this nation is facing for the next decade? And I think that's one of the things that we need to do as part of our policy approach, and we've started work on the type of policies that I think Australia and Australians are looking for the next 10 years, and we need to continue doing that work so that we do have a clear alternative to offer. And I think that's probably the second point which came out of Aston.
What sort of policy areas are you going to be bolstering the offering? Is it housing? That's the one that a lot of MPs mentioned when I rang after Aston. Is it energy? Because I know Peter Dutton in the Sir John Downer oration mentioned nuclear power. Like, where are the areas that we're expecting to see big policies coming soon?
Obviously, housing is an incredibly important one, and we're seeing the impact, especially on young Australians, of that dream of owning your own home is something that they continue to raise. Now, what I think we need to be doing is offering a solution so that they don't lose that dream and enter into the housing market. We've got to enable them to do it. It would seem that the Labor Party approach is to just say it's all too hard and what you should be doing is looking to rent. Now, I don't think that's the approach that we should be taking. So I think we should say, well, Labor's approach seems to be to young people, well, just rent. What we need to be saying is our approach is, no, we want to get you into a home, and we need to do the policy work on that. I think we need to do the policy work in immigration, and I've very much started that and will continue to drive it. I've spoken at the press club on what I think the approach we need to take when it comes to immigration, and I'll continue to deliver speeches and set that policy out going forward, because it's an absolute key as well of getting the balance right. Then I think we've got to make sure that we've got the focus on the economy and making sure that we've got policies which will lift productivity and make sure that we've got policies in place which will mean we'll continue to get job growth in our nation will continue to offer very good job opportunities for all Australians. This is another area that we're seeing declining as inflation continues to take root. We're seeing people's living standards decline, and so we need to be looking at how we can address that. So that's just three of, I think, five or six areas that we can be looking at.
Mm-hmm. Last one. Since Aston, the Liberals have settled their position on the Indigenous voice in the Constitution. Karen Andrews quit the front bench and said that the Liberals should be talking more about the cost of living. Do you think that it's the party settled the position on the voice because they want to get stuck into Labor and be banging on about that issue all year, or is it because you wanted to get it out of the way and move on to other issues like cost of living?
No, I think we settled the position on the voice because we'd obviously tried to work with the government. We tried to see whether it was possible to reach a bipartisan position, and it just became very clear that we weren't going to be able to do that. For instance, I would have really thought it would be a positive thing if we all could have agreed, and one of the questions that went in the referendum was, do you think that Indigenous Australians and Torres Strait Islanders should be recognised in the Constitution? Now, I think that would have got overwhelming support, and we would have been able to get support from both sides of politics to that. Then you could have had a second question, do you think that we should have a voice enshrined in our Constitution? So doing it in two parts would have meant, I think you would have got overwhelming support for that first question, and we could have had the debate around the second. For instance, you know, my view is that when it comes just to that, to a point of a principle, and it's a point of principle that I've always held very strongly around equality, equality before the law. That's something that, you know, the Enlightenment Project was all about. It's something the Judeo-Christian approach has all been about. And you go back to Aristotle, and when he was first thinking about constitutions, he said that the best constitution is one where all citizens are equal. So that is a fundamental principle. With Martin Luther King, with his famous quote around, you know, we want people judged by their character, not the colour of their skin, I think is really important. And so there's, for many people, that point of principle when it comes to the voice. Yet when it comes to recognition in the Constitution, that is something that we were all I think, prepared to agree on, and we could have got a very good outcome on. So I think that was why we took the decision that we did. Karen Andrews obviously very much supports our position when it comes to the voice, but she rightly says, and I think it's a very good point, what we have to do is not let the voice distract, that debate is obviously important, but not let it distract from those issues which are impacting on everyday Australians, and that is cost of living, that is inflation, that is interest rates. We're all feeling it, but in particular, I can tell you, you know, as I travel around my communities, that's what people are raising with me. So we've got to make sure, as MPs, as representatives of our community, we're reflecting the needs of our people, and that's why we do have to be focused on cost of living.
I think that might be all we have time for. I'm not sure whether Wannon is more famous for its Prosecco or its Feta, but I hope you have a glass or bite of something and get to relax. Thank you so much for joining us, Dan Tehan.
Been a pleasure, Paul, and it's more work for me tonight, so the Prosecco and Feta will have to wait a little bit, but it's been great to join you.
Cheers, Dan. The executive producer is Miles Martignoni. I'll be back with another episode of Australian Politics next week. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Brought to you by Lexus. Some things do more than their stated functions, because exceptional things inspire you to do exceptional things. To this select list, we add the all-new Lexus GX. With its exceptional capability, you'll see possibilities you never knew existed, sending you far outside your comfort zone. But as much as the GX challenges you, it also spoils you. Its intuitive technology and luxurious features mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to it. The all-new Lexus GX.